Hello everyone and welcome to JFG tonight for this Ask Me Anything night. Not much happening in the news. I can also do a garden update. I've been walking around the property looking at what's the state of things. It's great. It's great. It's great to see the work that you've done in the last years pay off, and now you don't have much to do on certain things. They survive the winter and you see them shiny in the spring. Everything is going well. Sigidam Sengis says, bruh. Okay, I don't know what that means. Sigidam Sengis says, haircut. Yes, I did cut my hair today. I decided that it was time. My hair was getting uncontrollable. Oops. Little bump of the camera here. My hair was becoming increasingly uncontrollable, so I cut my hair with a clipper, cut my beard, and cut my top hair with scissors. It's not now been many, perhaps more than a decade that I haven't gone to a professional hair cutter. I don't need them anymore. It is I now can operate solely with my own tools, and it costs zero, and I don't have to travel to civilization. That's better. So I was just setting up Entropy because I realized I forgot to set up Entropy before starting the show, although now it's a secondary platform. Medieval Woes has posted a picture of me on his Telegram, and he said, "What a guy." Apparently he was listening to an episode and he just paused and I was there smiling in the episode, and so he decided to post the picture on Telegram. And there are lots of people who don't know that I've moved to Odyssey, and so that's a great way for them to learn. Dang G says, that's what grooming used to be. Oh yeah, the good old days when grooming was just when grooming was just a question of hair cutting. All right, let's get started on the garden review. So inside the home, I have my 1, 2, 3, 4 shelves of different things growing. So here I have coriander, a full plate of coriander growing. Here I have half of it is thyme and half of it is parsley. However, it seems that perhaps, I don't know which half is which. Is it thyme? Thyme? Maybe it's parsley that's doing good and thyme is taking its time. In any case, sometimes you just have to give it time and it's going to eventually grow. Yeah, and on the side I have here 5 zucchini plants. Very good growth on them. And I have also 10 tomato plants, which are not part of the frame. Here I have beets. I have tomato plants and lots of beets growing under my pink light. Those are all different kinds of tomato. Those are bizarre, like green and orange and weird tomatoes. Those are basic dwarf tomatoes. Those are indeterminate cherry red tomatoes. And I have a couple of sweet peppers and spicy peppers in the back here. This is my Swiss chard plate. I have rainbow Swiss chard, rainbow here, all across here. I have some lettuce growing in the back here. Oh, 1 minute. Did you want to appear or did you want to... Okay. Hello, Mama Jeff.
Hello.
I thought you wanted to speak with me in private.
No, Jeff, everybody's telling me, daughter, you need to plant the carrot and the beet and the onion already outside right now.
Okay, well, I can do this. Stop scheduling activities on my time and I'll have time to do it.
Because they can resist the cold.
Yes, they can to a certain extent. Yes, I could do this. There would be no problem. Swiss chard, rainbow Swiss chard, green chard, green chard. Lettuce in the background. I have squash here, squash, And I have broccoli here. Broccoli, broccoli, broccoli. Here I have Brussels sprout, Brussels sprout, Brussels sprout. Corn, corn, corn. What else? Here I have... This whole thing here is 12 pots of a superb pickling cucumber. Beautiful. It's growing extremely well in my soil. I am excited because I've been working on getting cucumbers to work in my farm. And it's tough because I was starting with types of cucumber that I guess were not good for my soil. But this year I know that these are good with my condition, and I'm sure they will be extremely productive. I did 12 of them. Here we have a mix of spices, oregano. I don't even know which these are, but oregano and other stuff. Perhaps a little bit of coriander in the mix. Here I have some beets, some dill, and some more oregano. The oregano wasn't super successful, but I think there are some plants showing up that are this. I have, oh my god, this, I'm excited. Those are very productive yellow beans. They've all grown except this one, so I planted a second one in this one since it wasn't growing. But they seem extremely excited at the idea of growing, and I will get a lot of beans this year. Similarly to cucumbers last year, I wasn't satisfied with the production of my bean plants. So I went to see a local farmer who's an expert in growing a lot of beans, and he gave me the best beans for the current local circumstances and soil, and they've popped out. They have grown so fast. I can't wait to see them in my greenhouse. This is more beans here. I have some pumpkin in the back, but they didn't grow. I guess I would have to replant. I have some sweet pepper here, and I have indeterminate cherry red tomatoes here. So that's the state for one moment. That's the state for the inside. These lights are Root Farms light, except one layer is a pink light that I bought at some hardware store, and they are controlled automatically. They actually shut down. They're right here. They shut down just for the show so that it doesn't mess my show lighting, and then they turn back on when I end the show. And other than this, it's a 16-hour illumination schedule. I have put one shot today of fertilizer because I saw that some of the leaves were starting to be yellow, and that may be a sign that it was missing something. And just the shot of, well, not today, I put the shot of fertilizer yesterday. That was after 2 weeks, approximately 2 weeks of growing. They were already doing good, but I wanted to be sure that they had everything to survive in their little pots. Just the shot of fertilizer I've done yesterday, I've seen some things pop out, like the lettuce hadn't really grown. Suddenly, with the fertilizer, they started growing. This is not an argument, says, the world is a better place with JF tonight. The trolls are wishing to make the world worse. That is true. Just that says, JF, shave the turf off the top of your head. It's summertime, dude. The buzzed look all over is in. No, I'm not interested. I've always kept hair on the top, never used a clipper for the top, and I will not start today. Shelburne says, I had so many beans last year, yellow, green, and purple. Yeah, yellow are my favorite ones. I think they taste much better when you pan them in butter. It's you sear them in butter, it's much better than green, I find, personally. Want to see how you and Mama JF preserve these, or hear about how you work out amounts to grow for both of you, etc.? Well, you know, I will talk about what we do throughout the summer, but there's nothing spectacular. It's just you grow the most you can, and the more organized you are, and the more automatization you can add to your setup, the more energy you'll be able to spend planting. So I've been filling progressively the raised bed. So our raised bed is now filled to that level. Basically, half of it is filled. I've put at the bottom, I've put a layer of wood chips, and now I've been adding progressively soil in, and I will then cover with cow manure at the end. I hope that tonight the mods have it under control in terms of banning the trolls. Thank you for your work, dear mods. So we are at half level, and I will complete with a little more soil, topsoil, and mostly cow manure. I've just had a delivery of a full tractor of cow manure. Look at this. This is what it looks like. A big pile of shit, basically. Cow manure, 1 year old. It's been composted. It is perfect to enrich or to form a soil. And we have the big pile of wood chips that Mama had went to beg the guys that cut wood chips, and they cut branches. They dump a full truck of wood chips, and today our farmer friend brought us a full tractor bucket of manure. It's going to be awesome. We can now build the final layer of the soil, because I've made my own compost from kitchen leftovers, but in terms of volume, there's always a lack. There's never been enough, but with cow manure like this, I'm going to be able to up the soil a full new layer of super, super good soil for the plants. Edix says, looks like that pile of shit is giving JF some competition. Are you calling me a pile of shit, sir? This is the internet. Show some respect. The greenhouse is looking good. I didn't touch it this year. I've just let it survive being covered in snow throughout the winter, and then washed by the rain of the spring. And look at this. This is my greenhouse still standing. I made this design. I invented it from scratch. I listened to the councils that were telling me, Jeff, you need to put some cross braces. And there it is, still standing, despite the wind, despite the the absence of a foundation, and despite the snow. And it's totally unaffected. It doesn't show sign of wearing. It is just perfect. Now, I still have to continue my work this year to finish the roof. I've made a proof of concept roof here, and it worked. It worked great. It's holding the greenhouse panel very well. I've made the test, and it's not holding it through the winter. If you let snow accumulate on my panel, what happens is that the roof is not broken. It's not broken in any way, but the panel just falls. So the panel itself, because it's not screwed in any way, it's just slided in. If the panel accumulates enough snow, it bends and it eventually just falls. Well, so be it. I can still just remove the panels at the beginning of each winter. So this year I will continue building the racks for the top panels, and hopefully maybe I won't be fully done, because I've made a decision that this year I'm not buying lumber. So I'll be doing whatever I can to finish the work with the lumber I already have, but I'm not buying lumber under the current prices. So I do have a stack of lumber that's left over. We'll see what I can do. If I cannot complete the last part of the ceiling, it's okay. I can do that in better days when the economy will be back to normal. That's our pile of compost. It's about 1 foot high, because we had about 3 foot high pile of compost last year. I used it all to build the soil in the greenhouse. So that's our currently only active pile of compost. You can see a lot of animal bones that are in there. We have coconuts that are longer to compost, but the rest is very good compost with hashes from the wood stove, Kitchen leftovers, bones, and vegetables of all kind. Mama JF should have preserving shows later. Well, yes, we've sometimes I've shown my preserves. You know, I still have some preserves from previous year. That is my honey. That is my mustard pickles. It's old. I don't know if it's still going to be good in there. Hopefully, I have a couple of preserves from previous years that are still available. Active Shooter says, "Is amateur farming and streaming for 1 hour a day JF's only job?" Yes, it is. I'm also selling books. So buy the Revolutionary Phenotype, and I will continue to live happily as a streamer. Yes, it's been my job full time since 2017, and it's been working well thanks to the support of this community, which has supported me through bannings and through abandonment of my YouTube channels. And we're still here and still alive, and there are still lots of contributors through Subscribestar, Patreon, and it's great. It keeps the show alive. Ravenese says, "JF totally collects welfare. I don't see how he can earn enough streaming." That is false. What are these trolls doing here? I do not collect welfare of any kind. In fact, I absolutely want to avoid collecting welfare, because the problem when you, if I was to start collecting welfare, I would have to stop streaming, or I would have to totally demonetize my own platforms. Because the problem is, when you collect welfare, you have to tell them, I have no work, I make no income. So no, I've been avoiding collecting welfare at all costs, because you get into trouble. You have to lie. And then they discover that you're streaming, and then they over-evaluate your income. It's not worth it. I don't want trouble. I just want to be left alone. I have bitcoins. I have you guys. I'm surviving well. I'm producing my own food. Steven Robinson says, "Jeff, I predict that the Wolverine will return to your property for the bones in your compost." He might. He might very well. I've seen on the compost some birds. Some birds were systematically annoying our property, and they were specifically looking in the trash and in the compost. But last year I found a solution. I've put a lock on my trash. So my trash cans, I have a little lock that closes the cover. So because birds were literally living in our trash, they were systematically pulling out any bag we would put in there to seek for food or leftovers. Spindly Opinion says, "Gad Sahad had an ask me everything today, and he spent most of it complaining about paying over 50% tax to Trudeau." Well, yeah, I mean, Gad Sahad, here's a man who can see problems but not solutions. So Gad, well, I'm going to share something about Gad. I believe that Gad is about to die. I'm sorry, but I've looked at him on Joe Rogan recently. He has lost weight to the point where you expect him either to have cancer, and he's on like anti-cancerous drugs, or he has AIDS. I don't see any other explanation. I think that Gad will die within the next 3 months. I'm sorry, guys. Sorry to Gad, and condolences to his family. It's an unhealthy loss of weight that he has been going through. It's not the kind of loss of weight that I would expect just from exercising or diet. Or if it's exercising or diet, it's extreme exercising and diet. And I think he does do some exercise. He wanted to lose weight, but the level of weight loss that I see there is pathological, I think. Sorry, but Gad will die, probably without even having read the Revolutionary Phenotype, and yet posing as an evolutionary thinker. Too bad. Too bad. Sorry, Gad, and sorry to his family for handling that death events. That is the MamaJF zone, the no-dig zone. We see some plants have pierced through the newspaper, but it looks like it's going to be farmable still this year. That's the inside of the greenhouse, so we can see the plants of last year that have died. We can see that my ropes have basically broken under the force of the wind during the winter. So I think that this year I'm going to make a new try. I'm going to try a fisherman rope, you know, fishing string. I think that it might resist throughout the year because I don't want to reinstall the ropes every year for the tomato plants. Here at the bottom, you can see the garlic patch at the entry of the greenhouse, and they're looking good. Look at this. The garlics have already grown for their spring growth. I've taken a close-up picture. We can see very healthy plants of garlic popping out of the soil. So I had planted them at the beginning of the summer last year. And I would suspect that I will be able to harvest them at the end of this summer. And then I will be able to replant them, perhaps replant a portion of the garlics so that they continue producing. What else do I have here? I have my raspberry. We don't see it clearly, but that's the main plant of raspberry, going in that way, that way, that way. And that's a new plant of raspberry that has seeded itself from just one of the raspberries has fallen onto the ground, and it has led to a new raspberry plant. Beautiful. It's still not with leaves, but it seems to be doing good. That's a blueberry plant. Again, no leaves. That's our cherry tree. It's starting to show some green here. And that is our black currants. They are already starting to produce leaves, doing good. That's a pear tree among some of the pear and apple trees that we have. It's starting to show some life. That's our hazelnut bush. Hazelnut bush also. Black currant, very healthy, very good. And I see some shoots of rhubarb coming out of the soil, so our rhubarb has made it through the winter. It's going to be awesome, because last year I planted it too late, it didn't really produce, and this year, hopefully, it will produce. So that's the state of the farm. Edit X says, soil looks like shit. Well, no, it's a great soil. It's just covered with wood chips, so you don't really see the soil. The soil was very good compost, very healthy for the plants. So I have no fear that it will be productive soil, but what you see are the wood chips that are covering the soil to protect it. Dino Legovic says, hazelnuts can grow truffles too. But I guess that's if they are accompanied by the truffle as a mushroom. I don't know. This is not an argument, says Gad used to be athletic. Gad used to be interesting. Well, he's never been interesting to me. He's always been at the border of interesting. But all he's done is surf on the anti-SJW wave, but he's never produced anything of intelligence, and we could see it when I reviewed his crappy book, the parasite, the mind parasite or whatever. Absolutely useless thinking, surfing on the memes of evolutionary thinking, but without providing anything of interest. Justet says, Get big sea fish fishing line, JF. It's the strongest, all tested before it goes to market. Yeah, that's the kind of thing I want. All right, so today is Ask Me Anything. If you'd like to send super chats to support the show, use the dollar button under the regular chat. Odyssey is my favorite platform for super chats. Or as an alternative, you can use Entropy. The link is in the description below. And if you would like to appear on the show, you can join the Discord. The link to the Discord server is in the description below, and join the waiting room. And if I see you in the waiting room, I'll be happy to slide you into the JF lounge. One moment. GG from Lally says, what did the experts say about your book? Well, Robert Rivers, one of the greatest biologists alive, has said, very good book, very powerful, very well treated. It was an important subject, and I'm very impressed. So that was the comment of Robert Rivers. Other than this, there's not much peer review quotation of the book, which is sad because it's a book that makes a significant advance in understanding how genetic layers evolve, and yet people are remaining silent as if this advance wasn't made. So very sad what is happening for now with the revolutionary phenotype, but at the same time, I knew when I wrote it that it would take about 20 years for it to be accepted science. So I keep waiting. I'm here every night waiting for biologists, including Brett Weinstein and Heather Heyer, just acknowledge that a massive advancement has been made in biology by understanding that there are phenotypes that win the war against genes, and it's very dangerous if society is headed that way. Justed says, JF is always autistically honest on his thoughts on anyone or anything. That's why he has a hardcore audience that appreciates his brutal honesty. Yes. Thomas O'Ward says, some time ago, Nick Fuentes was complaining of fatigue and chest pain. I sent a super chat describing the Walker, Murdoch, and Steinberg signs, which he was positive for. I advised him to get checked by a cardiologist. I hope he did, but I think my actions were far more kind than JF's toward Gad Saad. Well, you want me to be kind against Gad Saad? The problem is the problem is that Gad Saad has produced nothing of interest in his entire life. And there he is just paying taxes to the federal government, to Trudeau. That's all he's useful for, really. So he complains against the taxes, but it's really his only way, his only path to have an input in the world, because he's too clownish to have an intellectual input, a serious one. This is not an argument, says Gad was interesting insofar as he was a getaway to actual thinkers such as JF. Since I left Twitter, I don't know what Gad and other midwits such as James Lindsay are spouting about. Well, yes, and it's good in a way to live separately from this world of grifter, really. Grifter of pseudo-internet intellectualism. Bird Dude is with us. Hello, Bird Dude. How are you doing?
Salut Jean-François, comment ça va?
Ça va bien.
I hope so. It's been very hot here.
Yes, it's getting hot in the studio. I might start to... Maybe I could buy an AC just for the studio, because I do have to close the door of the studio. Maybe it's good to have an AC.
Is it for the plants or for the sound?
Well, for the sound, for just generally, not hearing if Mama JF is washing the dishes or the rest of the house. I don't want any of the noise to get into the mic, or I don't want my voice to bother them. So yes, since I have to close the door, perhaps it would be worth having an AC in here. But then the AC has a problem, which is it generates some amount of noise, which can be heard in the mic.
You should be able to cancel it out if you set this sensitivity low enough.
Yeah. Anyway. So, Bird Dude, this is an important conversation. I was very enthusiastic about this Ask Me Anything because I was hoping you would call. Last time we spoke, you had a plan to inseminate a woman who didn't want you to be the father, didn't want you to care for the child, but was accepting your sperm.
Yeah, well, like they say on the internet, OP never delivers. Been trying to contact her. She's not really saying anything relevant. She's not inviting me over or anything.
So you're trying to approach her and you don't feel her warmly inviting you?
She absolutely isn't. I guess, you know, she's very mercurial and whatever thoughts were going through her head and whatever dreams she had in her head that day, maybe she wasn't in the right state of mind or something, because I don't know.
Yeah, well, if she has mental issues of the kind that I suspected, it's not surprising that she would have variations also, and at one time tell you I want you to inseminate me, and at other times acting distantly.
It's very anticlimactic for the audience, but
yes, but that's life. I mean, we want to make a show about reality, and that's the reality. The reality is it's very hard to get females to accept being inseminated in these years.
Very sadly. But it was, I still think, an interesting dichotomy presented.
Yes, it was. So what did you want to talk about tonight?
Well, you mentioned GadSat, and when I was in university, I actually met the gentleman.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He was visiting the university, and this was years and years ago. My first impression of him was, this guy is going to, like, die in obscurity. He has no idea what he's talking about. The scientific study, so-called scientific studies that he was presenting to us, were just ridiculous. And this isn't going to go anywhere. So when I heard that God said, got his own, like, I'm not sure if he's on YouTube or whatever platform he's on, the presence, I'm like, oh, wow, good for him. I guess he's making the bucks if he's paying that much tax to Trudeau. Good God. Anyway, he at the time was talking about starting a business school that was supposed to be having principles informed by evolutionary psychology. So, I don't know how that panned out, but that sounds...
That sounds like a crappy Gad Saad ID.
Yeah.
But it's what you see in the university. You don't even have people dreaming to increase our intellectual understanding of the world anymore. You have people who want to take evolutionary principles and make dance out of it, and they get hired as professor of dance in the arts department. It's so sad what's happening with the university, and Gad Saad is a perfect personification of this. He's just a loose thinker, spouts stuff that comes from greater thinkers than him, and tries to kind of mold this in a creepy, molded creature of some kind. That is the intellectual product of Gad Saad.
Oh, I certainly agree with that, but at the same time, given just how speculative evolutionary psychology is as a field, I'm not sure how far he would have gone, even if he managed to do it.
Yeah, Evolutionary psychology is founded on great principles, but the work itself in it has been just underwhelming.
Here's the study that he presented to us on the day he showed up. My professor, this was tons of years ago, my professor invited him because I think he was like a personal friend. And this was an evolution ethics course, I think. I don't even remember. Anyway, he came in and this is what he told us. He actually had a grant given to him to do a study where he got, I think it was a Maserati rented. And he used that as his experimental car. And as a control, he had some Toyota or something.
Okay.
And he or his students gauged like the reaction time it would take to brake in front of his old car versus his Maserati. And he took that data and he saw that people were a lot faster to brake in front of the Maserati so that they wouldn't hit it.
Mm-hmm.
And he concluded by saying, this shows a very deep evolutionary basis for human behavior, even when it comes to people's property. And
well, it makes sense. What's wrong with this?
It makes sense, but I think a more proximal explanation would be if you're hitting a Maserati, it's going to cost a hell of a lot more than if you hit an older car.
Oh yeah,
your insurance premiums are going to go up dramatically if you hit a new expensive car versus an old car. I mean, that's kind
and
of.
And you could also argue that it's a mere side effect of an attentional mechanism where people just note more the presence of a big car, a high-value car, and so that results in them being more attentive at the moment to brake.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. Yeah, that would make sense too. He also mentioned a study where there was like this, I don't know, I can just give like the broad strokes, this voluntary, you know, little thing in an office where you pay for snacks, but it doesn't have like a coin machine or anything. So you can just take things and nobody would know. So it's like an honor system. And he said that people would steal less if they had a photocopied picture of cartoon eyes pasted somewhere in the proximity of the snacks.
Yeah.
And he said the same thing. This is some sort of deep. Well, I thought it kind of, if I saw that, it would imply to me that there was a camera or that there was some sort of video.
Yeah, well, you trigger certainly in the cognition of the person seeing the cartoon eyes all sorts of questions about who put these cartoon eyes there. Are they telling me that they're observing me? Does that mean that they are observing me for real? And definitely when you play with this side of the human cognition, you will develop more hesitant behavior and certainly be more careful about not stealing.
Yeah. But I mean, it's kind of impossible to tell just with that kind of experiment. It's a very low quality experiment that that he gets grants for, especially for using his lab's funding to rent a Maserati. Like,
this is not an argument, says nonsense chat. This guy is a fantasist. JF should Molyneux this guy. Well, how do I Molyneux Bird Dude?
Nonsense chat. What are you saying?
I don't know. He's just critical of you, but I don't think he's right. I think it's great to speak with Bird Dude.
I was just talking about what Gadsad presented us years ago before he was like this big star. I don't get it. Yes. I apologize to you, Mr. Argument. Anyway, the garden's going well.
Yes.
So there's really not much to say. You got your trimier. Your manure?
Yes.
So
this will be great. I can't wait to see how much more productive the plants will be because I've never really had manure from a farmer. I had store-bought manure, but my impression is that it's not super nutrient.
Yeah, I wish I. These are questions that I'm going to eventually want to answer for myself, if and when I get some actual property.
Yes.
So I am very closely paying attention to your experiments.
Wonderful.
Especially the no-till area that Mama JF put up.
The what?
No-dig.
Oh my God, no-dig. I'm not super impressed. You need a good soil under the no-dig, or else you need to build soil. It boils down to this. Because they've not been super productive.
You need to get it started. This is one of those permaculture things that got really popular as of late.
Because people make YouTube videos about it, and the YouTube algorithm is like, oh yeah, this guy likes no-dig, I'm going to throw some no-dig at him. And it's not a super intelligent way to farm. It's not very productive.
I actually attended a lot of local events and seminars regarding permaculture, because that's kind of the community that I got involved in. This was before COVID, obviously. And yes, I would say it's very much unproductive relative to, say, conventional means, or like higher intensity gardening or farming. But the thing is, it's more like if you have extra space, let's say you're tired and you don't have enough machinery to work the entire land, you have a little space left over, you can basically just set it and forget it, come back every so often, collect berries or whatever's growing in there and just leave it. That's kind of the idea.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So.
All right. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about tonight?
No, sir. Just disappointment.
All right. Thanks for calling, for sharing your disappointment.
Thanks, Chad. See you later.
Bye-bye. And we have Samurai. Hello, Samurai. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good, JF. Good to be with you. Good to meet you, I guess. I'm pretty new to your community. Right. How are you doing this week? How are you?
Doing great.
All right. Hey, good to hear. Well, cool, man. I'm a little nervous. I've never been on one of these sort of internet shows before, but you know, it should be a pretty fun time.
Are you smoking drugs?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Should I be?
No. But you sounded like you were a little bit on the party or something.
Oh, did I have a bit of a sore throat right now.
Oh, okay.
So that's probably why. Just a bit of an infection, but
okay.
No, I'm pretty boring, you know. I get high off life, all that whatever
nice.
You want. Yeah, exactly.
So what do you do in life?
Well, I just graduated. I just finished my undergrad in business. And it was just so interesting. It was just, you know, so amazing. I kind of wanted to ask you about that, because you are a biologist, right? And you have a lot of sort of post-grad experience, right? I think you've completed your PhD as well. I was wondering if you could tell me a little about that. You know, how did you like, I think maybe now you have sort of a more negative, a more pessimistic view about it, but I'd like to hear about it a little more. You know, how did you like it? What was the process like? Sort of what was your day-to-day?
Well, PhD studies, you mean, or after?
Yeah, no, your PhD studies.
PhD studies are an excruciating process during which you will do useless stuff during 5 years just to prove that you can be the most dedicated at this particular specific kind of useless stuff that you do. And so you're going to learn hyper advanced technique to show that you are the best of the best in doing this specific useless stuff. It's terrible. It's a loss of time. It serves nothing. It doesn't help you get jobs. Everyone wants to do the PhD so they can be teachers and professors, and there's just not enough place because the boomer professors won't die. And so there's no reason why you would impose this on yourself other than a desire to show that you are extremely stubborn to the point of threatening your own mental sanity over 5 years, and most likely ending up with nothing at the end because most people won't finish it, or end up with something and it's a depression. PhD studies are a novel form of slavery for the university and academic system, during which they will pay you the least they can possibly pay you. You will be fighting for awards to be recognized, to be published, and most of it won't work, and you'll end up spending so much time just applying for grants and demanding permissions to be published that you won't have any time to do anything productive. It's a big loss of time, and there should be no PhD studies. There could be PhD studies if there were 1,000 times less people wanting to do it. But at the current rate, we're producing way too many PhDs, and at the end, it's worth nothing, because anyone who can suffer for 5 years can have a PhD right now. You don't need to be particularly brilliant. That's the problem.
Okay, so generally a pretty favorable view, I'd say, of the PhD process. Well, hey, no, I appreciate the honest view. What? So do you think that's true for like... do you think that's this is true for mostly like the PhD process itself, like in a, I don't know, like by itself, or is this generally true for like all postgraduate work? What do you think of like a master's program, for example, or other postgrad options? Are they kind of the same, or would you view them differently?
I mean, there are specific things, like for example, in the domain of psychology, the master's program is necessary to have your license of some kind of psychologist. So that's understandable that someone would do this if they really want the license. But if you're talking about an academic type of MSc, where it's basically just PhD light, and it's just like it's PhD light in terms of what you will get from it and learn from it, it's also PhD light in terms of the amount of suffering. Because it's like, oh, I want to be recognized in some way, but not the full way. So you go halfway measure, you go MSc. But what can you do with an MSc? Nothing useful that I know.
Okay. So that's pretty interesting. See, I don't know. I don't know if you really do like life advice on this show. So I'll kind of try to... Oh, okay. Well, I'll kind of try to. I'm sure your audience doesn't.
Do you have a girlfriend?
No, I do not. No, I don't.
Are you looking for one? Have you been successful, or have you had failures with women?
Yeah, you know, I had a girlfriend in the past, and it was very nice, you know. She was a nice girl. She was from Switzerland, which maybe opens up. She was very nice, but, you know, it didn't really work out. And right now, I don't talk to women a lot. I don't have a lot of people who... I just don't have a lot of friends who are women. And I don't really go out of my way looking for one. Mm-hmm. But well, I'm curious.
Young? I guess you have lots of time ahead of you.
Yeah, I'm 21. Or no, I just turned 22. My birthday
was... Well, you got plenty of time, so you can keep building your value and... of course, things like PhD, I say it's useless. There's one thing where it's not useless, indeed, it's on the sexual market. So it is a form of recognition really? That will make the sexual market easier for you.
Okay, actually, that's super interesting. You know, this is not one of the perks I hear very often. So
yeah.
Do you think it's just like you're perceived as smart by women, and then that makes them want to sleep with you? Is it like that simple, or is there more to it than that?
It's pretty much this. It's women are magnets for any form of social recognition. And by having done the PhD, they see you as having achieved the highest degree in a specific branch of life, which is intellectualism. And so you are a man of value to them. And it's funny because most PhDs are dirt poor. They they don't have jobs, it's actually a disadvantage to have PhD on your CV. Like, you can't get employed as a cashier at the grocery store because they say, oh, you're an intellectual, it's not your place here. But so you can be dirt poor and yet they will see you as, oh, well, it's normal, he's a PhD. Whereas if you didn't have the PhD and you're dirt poor, they're going to be like, oh, no, sorry, you're not the type of guy I was thinking of.
Okay, that's so interesting. You know, I appreciate your perspective, actually, because I, you know, a lot of people, I hear kind of the generic sort of, oh, you know, if you really like the subject, you should go get ahead and get a PhD and it'll open so many doors. So it's really interesting to hear a different perspective from your view about the PhD. So it's something I'll think about. As I mentioned, you know, I just finished my undergrad in business, but I honestly don't find business that interesting. I kind of just went into it because, you know, oh, it's a competitive market. I'll probably end up getting a pretty good job, but, you know, there are other things I'd rather do. And, you know,
like what?
Oh, you know, I love music. Even biology is pretty interesting to me, although I'm not very much trained in biology. I only mention it because you're pretty trained in biology, but it's a pretty interesting, at least as an abstract. The only real training I have, though, is a high school education. So I only know the very basics of, like, you know, what are codons and, like, the Krebs cycle and all that super interesting stuff, you know. But
do you want to do music professionally, or have you produced stuff before?
Yes, I have produced stuff before. Mostly what I did was with music was live performances, you know, across my state, and sometimes at occasional music festivals. And I did go and record a couple of songs later, but it was you know, they were not very good. They weren't very good recordings. They also don't exist anymore.
And what
so
style?
At a time I wanted to do... Oh, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
What style?
I usually do funk, jazz, and rock. I'm a drummer. I play drums.
Okay, drummer. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, what are your hopes for life in the current context where we are entering a depression, you have a business diploma, what are you going to do?
Well, yeah, that's the question, uh-huh. So I've been looking for jobs all over, and a lot of the jobs, this is sort of interesting. I find a lot of the jobs that are open are in sales, actually. And, you know, I would rather deep throat a cactus than do sales, okay? Sales is just terrible. I really hate it.
You talk about deep throating a cactus, and I kind of asked you earlier if you were taking drugs, but the true question that I had on my mind, but I didn't want to be impolite, was, are you gay? Because your voice sounds gay. Okay.
No, because it's just because
your voice sounds, but I mean, your voice sounds gay, but at the same time, it's been a while since I haven't spoken to a young man. So maybe that's just the voice of young men. But now you talk about deep throating cactuses.
No, that was just a... Oh, that is so funny. That is so funny. I'm not gay, okay? I'll just put that out there. Deep throating a cactus, it was just a figure of speech. I could have put
figure
in
of speech.
I would rather
okay.
jump into a lava pit.
But
let's
you
say
have
that.
If it's a figure of speech, the image came into your mind. You saw yourself just going back and forth over a tubular structure with spikes on it.
Oh, yeah, you're right. There you go. I think you've taken me out of the closet. This is good. We're making some real progress.
So you came in not knowing what to do, and you come out of my show, and you're gay.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. No, I'm not gay.
Okay.
I'm entirely straight. But yeah, interesting. Yeah, maybe some. You know, I don't know, JF. I know you live by mostly away from civilization, and you said it's been a while since you've talked with young men. This is actually something kind of interesting. Like with I don't know. It's like there's this male social dynamic. I don't know if it was around when you were a young man. Maybe it was, where you just kind of act gay with the boys, you know, quote unquote. And
this
will be.
There was none of this when I was young. So talk to me about it. What is this?
Yeah, so it's more like, it's really hard to describe. It's this sort of social phenomenon. I think maybe some of your viewers might know what I'm talking about, where you're like, oh, you know, I'll suck your dick or whatever.
Oh my God, it's the Zoomer sarcastic gayness?
Yes,
I've seen it in Nick Fuentes. I've seen it in his videos, but I didn't know it was a thing that all the boys get together and do that.
Maybe not all the boys, but it's common. It's common, I feel like, in my generation. At least among the Zoomers. Yeah, it's kind of this ironic, sarcastic gayness and whatever. I don't know. That's become more common. And it sounds like it's sort of a trend. It sounds like it wasn't around when you were a student or whatever.
No, I would say it was not there at all.
Okay, interesting. Well,
it's worrying, though. Don't you think it's a form of promotion? And that it can contribute ultimately. There may be a guy who starts playing and who wouldn't have become gay, but because of the play and because of the whole sarcasm, gets tempted and ends up gay. Don't you think it can cause gayness?
So I'd say that's a good question. Maybe not that in itself, but I think maybe that... maybe in a combination with the sort of sexualization of society, I think maybe the combination of that, maybe it's more of an extension of that in the first place. Maybe that's right. Maybe that could be a thing. And actually, can I ask you about this since you're a geneticist? Can I ask you about like the homosexuality gene, so to speak? Is there actually, I'm not clear on how, if this is how genes work. The way I always thought it worked was that, okay, you're born with certain genes, right? Which give you maybe, I don't know, to simplify it, we can just say, oh, it gives you a 3% chance to be gay, right? And then when you go through certain events in your life, those genetic markers will switch on or off. And then you will become gay or you will not become gay. Is that, am I in the ballpark here or am I totally off? I'm not
really
sure.
That's one view. It's a simplistic view, but it can be this, and we're looking at it from that perspective sometimes. There could be genes that are more radical, that have more direct effect, but it's definitely a possibility what you presented there. And then you can ask yourself, what are the total outputs of this gene? For example, you just mentioned the fact that the gene had a property to make you gay, but it's probably not as simple as this. The gene probably just has some effect on your brain or behavior, and that effect on brain and behavior eventually sums up to a percentage chance of becoming gay. I've presented the theory, for example, that there may be a gene that when it finds itself, whether in a woman or a man, it makes you act more feminine, makes you want to put makeup on, makes you want to be sassy and sexy. And when it finds itself in a woman, it's perfect because it helps the woman reproduce and acquire better mates. When it finds itself in a male, it makes him act more feminine. And out of the femininity in the current society, femininity being associated with being gay, he's driven toward the gay lifestyle. But the gene originally, its function was to make females more sassy.
Okay. And do you think that's rewarded on the sexual market these days?
To be gay?
Or that sort of gene, that behavior that you mentioned?
Well, for a female?
For a male, actually.
For a male? Well, the thing is, being sassy for a male can be good in certain liberal cities. Like, if you go around university town, there's going to be women who are looking for feminized males. Is it going to get you laid? Maybe. But is it going to lead you to a united family and a productive one? I don't think so. Because most likely the woman that you will attract with that strategy will be messed up in her head.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Like I mentioned, I just came out of college, and yeah, it's very much like this liberal college town where I see this a lot. Sort of men that act that way will be sort of regarded as cute and whatever. Sort of like, oh, and women will want to hang around them. So I always thought that was kind of interesting. That was a form of reward. But does it go to form a more effective family? I guess that really is the question. I feel like a lot of people, at least in my experience, and this is probably not true at everywhere, but a lot of people don't really date that much for marriage anymore, at least in my experience. So
Yeah.
maybe it doesn't even matter.
Well, it does matter if you are playing the evolutionary game, because having a date in a college town that likes you because you're a feminized male, and she likes the image of you, and she's really using you as a display puppet for SJW friends, and to kind of convince herself that she's leading a fight against the sexual dimorphism of humans. That is completely useless waste of time for you. You have to work for getting to the family and the next generation. There is no evolutionary game outside of this.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. So another question, and this is kind of unrelated, but another question I had for you, when it comes to sort of the genetic stuff. As I mentioned, I'm not too educated on this stuff, so I don't know if I can have that an intelligent of a conversation with you. But I was wondering if you had any sort of resources or like beginner resources that you recommend to learn a bit more about genetics and this stuff,
Have you
or
read
if
Richard Dawkins' The Selfish Gene?
no, I haven't. I've heard of
You
it
have to
though.
read this. It's as simple as this. It's the best
Okay.
book that makes the case the most efficiently. Then, if you're not satisfied, you go to The Extended Phenotype by Richard Dawkins. And then, if you're still not satisfied, you go for The Revolutionary Phenotype by me. And you know pretty much everything there is to know about what it means. A note about genes, since you seem to be very early in gaining interest in this. Don't think that genes are the physical thing that most people think they are. Don't think that genes are the segment of DNA itself. Genes are a concept, and it turns out that this concept corresponds to segments of DNA, but think of genes as the concept more than the physical thing. The gene as the concept of making copies of itself, mutating, and being naturally selected. That's what matters to be a gene. And you'll get this from Richard Dawkins' The Selfish Gene. It's pretty clear.
Okay. I will definitely check out that book. But it's interesting you say that genes are a concept and not necessarily like this physical, not necessarily, right? Although it can correlate, this physical thing, these physical nucleotide codes. Because I think the view that a lot of people have a view, whether true or not, is that like you have the super biologically deterministic view, in that genes determine like sort of all of our behavior, and sort of determine the path that our lives will take. Whether true or not, that's what people say. I would say, how is it? I guess how is it? How does the idea of genes being a concept relate to the effect that your biology has on your life? I know that's kind of a big question, but the effect that
Well,
biology has on your life.
it's because people tend to look at the DNA and say, okay, that's the gene. The problem is the DNA in and of itself wouldn't be a gene, and if you didn't know that it's going to get copied by some proteins, if you didn't know that eventually it will get ejected into another body that will become your child, if you don't know all this, it's not really a gene yet. So the gene is not so much the DNA itself, but the entire cycle of intergenerational transmission that includes everything that's needed for that intergenerational transmission to occur. That makes the DNA a gene, and that makes you realize, okay, there is a copy happening from my genes in my bowels to the genes in the body of my child. That's what makes it a gene. It's important because it helps you distinguish for so many other things that people tend to think are just like genes, but they're not. One moment, I have to cough.
Oh, yeah.
So people will come for human culture and claim, oh, well, it makes copies, it spreads, it passes from one generation to the next, so it's not different, right? But when you get down to, okay, but what are the conditions to be a gene? You realize you have to have a mechanism of copy, of replication. Human culture has it. You have to have the ability to transmit itself to another generation. Human culture has it and DNA have it. But as I show in my book, human culture doesn't have something that DNA has, and it's random mutations. And because random mutations are part of the concept of genes, as Richard Dawkins conceives of it, then it shows you that there are things like human culture that look in every way like genes, but because they're missing one aspect of the abstract concept, they don't operate as genes at all, and they end up not having the selfishness that Richard Dawkins has described, and which is so amazing as it relates to the diversity of life and everything that life forms become.
Okay, so what exactly do you mean by mutation? Because in my mind, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, in my mind, right, when it comes to mutation during like DNA transcription or translation, it's when, you know, the proteins that are looking over the DNA make a mistake and accidentally insert, you know, new DNA, which can produce different proteins and have a different effect. Don't we kind of have that in human culture as well, right? We have ancillary ideas. We have, I don't know, trying to think of a good example off the spot. I don't know, like branches of Christianity or like branches of religion. We have branches of ideas all the time. What's the difference between a mutation and the, I guess, interplay of ideas where new ideas can spontaneously arise
from? Well, you have to read The Revolutionary Phenotype, my book, because it's exactly my advance. In chapter 9, there's an answer to your question, but I'll answer in summary here. Yes, culture mutates in the sense that it changes, but it doesn't have randomness of mutation. It's very important. You can have mutations, but if your mutations are not random, they are determined by another entity. In the case of culture, the IDs change in a certain direction. If it went a random direction, then you'd have all sorts of crazy things in human culture, which you don't have. In fact, human culture is orderly, directed at human reproduction, at DNA replication. I take for proof of this just the amount of cultural memes and religions that have survived all over the world, which are against homosexuality, for example, or which strongly favor the family lifestyle and reproduction. That is a sign that culture doesn't head in a parasitic direction. And the reason it doesn't head in a parasitic direction is that culture is printed by the human brain. And the human brain, unlike human DNA, because DNA, when it mutates, as you've mentioned, a protein makes an error. The error is truly random. There's nothing that the protein didn't want to make that error, and it didn't plan that error in a certain direction. But the human brain plans its error of transmission of cultural memes, and the human brain manipulates the memes in a very intentional and evolutionary ways. So that when you talk to your children, you don't encourage them with a religious software that would lead them to homosexuality. Most likely, on Earth, 95% of the people will direct their children toward a heterosexual lifestyle. So that's the non-randomness of human culture mutations. And that's simply the reason why memes and human culture are not a replicator like DNA. It's they don't have the randomness. They are molded by our brain.
Okay. So it's the intentionality mainly is the main thing, right?
I phrased it as intentionality, but if you look in my book, ultimately intentionality boils down to evolution, because the intentions we have on our brain, they have evolved. So ultimately, it boils down not to intentionality, although it passes through intentionality. Ultimately, it boils down to the fact that memes are molded by our DNA.
Gotcha. Okay. I definitely will read your book, JF.
All right.
I'll definitely grab your book. Are you offering any signed copies? I'll take one of
I
those.
sold some copies, but I promise after selling 150 that I wouldn't sell any more, so I can't. But
Ah, that's a
I can
shame.
offer a signed copy of my second book, which
Oh,
will
yeah.
probably become available in months or years, I don't know.
Okay, what's your can you tell me about your second book? What's that
My
about?
second book is right in the subject that we're talking about because it's called The Moral Signal, The Evolutionary Basis of Human Civilization. And it's about how do you, if you abandon the idea of memes and the idea of human culture as being a self-managed entity, a kind of a life of its own, if you abandon this idea, how do you conceive of human culture from a biological standpoint, with understanding that DNA is at the center of it all and controlling it all? And I come up with a system of signaling theory and information theory. Where you have to explain in an act of communication, forget about the word, forget about the human language. What is happening in the act of communication? What's happening is that someone is sending something and someone is receiving something. And that's the moral signal. That's the receiver and sender dynamic of interpersonal relationships in humans. So I develop a theory of human language from this, of human reactions, human traditions, religious belief, etc., all from a signaling standpoint.
Okay, interesting. This is a really big thing in communications theory, actually. So
Yeah.
I think mainly they focus on right the channel that you should send it from,
Yeah.
and it's main. But yeah, that thing about like encoding and decoding a message is a pretty big part of it. I remember reading about that. oh, I see a chat here. The caller is 22 with no current job. Does he have income? I do have a job. I do have a job. I'm working an athletics event job right now, so I wanted to put that out there. But
Right.
I'm looking for a job that's actually in my field. So anyway, sorry for the interruption. But anyways, I wanted to ask then, what would be the main message of your second book then? Like, oh, we have these cultures that are sort of descended from biology, and we have these linguistic ways that we encode messages. What is that all working towards? What is your suggestion in that book? What is your overall goal?
Basically, I counter the discourse of Brett Weinstein, Richard Dawkins, who are telling us we have to wait for some advancement to understand human culture. I say, stop waiting. Nothing is coming. We already understand human culture, but no one has the balls to say it. Human culture is just an evolutionary product, like your ass, your heart, your lungs, your legs, and it's with this basic evolutionary framework that you can understand all of it. There will be nothing coming to inform us further. We have to stop waiting and dreaming of mimetics or a kind of sociology that would work. It won't work. We have to say humans are just yapping apes. That's it.
Okay. Sort of a hopeful and depressing message a little bit at the same time. So then what do you think? And sorry, I don't want to take up your whole show. So feel free to say like shut up, man, and kick
It's
me
all
out.
good.
So I wanted to ask then, what do you, I know this is maybe a basic concept that you've gone over before. I just wanted to say, what do you think of this idea of like cultural Darwinism, that only the, most successful cultures survive and, go on to survive, I guess, and pass their values down intergenerationally. Do you think that's something that's in danger in the current climate that we have, or is it all an extension of our biology? How does that work?
Well, do you think that certain cultures have replaced others?
Yeah, of course.
Yes, it's undeniable. The European culture, for example, has largely dominated North America when there was no European culture here in the 16th century. So clearly, then, what you call cultural Darwinism, but what we should just call Darwinism, is true. It's true for birds, it's true for squirrels, and it's true for humans.
Gotcha. Okay. And
Are you too depressed to keep speaking, or or maybe we just lost him? I think he lost connection. Somehow he has lost connection. Ariel Suarez says, "I'm having too much buffering right now." Well, anyways, our guest has lost connection, and so I was headed toward the end of the show. Sorry if you are experiencing lag. Perhaps I can do a quick news review and hopefully the lag will stop. This is not an argument, says, did I ever tell you about the man who taught his asshole to talk? What is this? James says, I really enjoyed that guy's cognition. Yes, Samurai was a good caller. It's been a while since we haven't had a young, intelligent man call. You know, when they call, they're either just fans of me and they already know about all this. But this guy seemed like he didn't know anything about my stuff. And yet he was engaging with it and absorbing it very well. So it's great to see some people still open, basically. Samurai says, hey, JF, I did lose connection. Thank you for talking with me, ? Well, yes, thanks to you for coming, and we appreciated the discussion. Quick review of the news before I close the show. Justin, Twitter deal temporarily on hold. Elon Musk wants to reevaluate if spam and fake accounts do indeed represent less than 5% of the platform's user base. And then Elon Musk was saying, still committed to acquisition. All of this development led to, well, people being afraid that the deal will not pass and the value of the Twitter stock suddenly dropping and then going back up when Elon Musk confirmed he was still committed to acquisition. It made me realize something. I think we might be the victim of bullshit here. Perhaps Elon Musk will never buy Twitter. Perhaps this is all a play. And perhaps Liberty will never come back to Twitter. I was just struck by it. I knew there was a possibility, but I was struck by the behavior here of Elon Musk suddenly finding excuses, saying, oh, I want to check if it's true that there's only 5% of the user base that is bots. What is he trying to accomplish? Is he trying to lower the price? And if he tries to lower the price, will he get a deal? I don't know. I don't know. People were sending me 4chan discussion segments where it was announced that Murdoch Murdoch will stop being produced. It's over. And Murdoch Murdoch, the producer, was saying, I won't stop making art. I've made memes and I wouldn't mind still writing books for you guys. I know that Murdoch Murdoch will probably always be the thing that touched the most people, and that's totally okay with me. It is hard to explain, but people who do art hope all of their lives that one day someone will see it and feel it. I've had that experience 1,000 times over from you guys. You're so smart and so highly critical of everything in the world. You're the notorious four chuds, but my art made you feel. I am satisfied. Tell Schopenhauer that he was wrong. Men can find satisfaction. I experience a lot of satisfaction at the idea that Murdoch Murdoch will not be produced anymore. It is the end of an artistic era, the era of crappy art of the 2016-2020 era. It is a great gain for the world that this poorly constructed show will be off the air. It was crap. It was sewer level. It was what the internet deserved, and it's what it got for many years. The problem with Murdoch Murdoch has always been the incapacity to write a script. That is the problem. And they are totally failing at constructing a story. So if you are such a failure, you know, go get a job at the Walmart or whatever, become a McDonald's cashier. There are still some of them in the US where they don't have the automated ordering system, but don't try to produce art on the internet. You don't master it, you suck, and the world is better off without any further production of that kind. Cloud Warmer sends a super chat. He says, Jeff, from the perspective of ad revenue and ad impressions, the amount of bots on the platform would have a dramatic impact on the valuation of the company if they make up a large enough percentage of the potential viewership. I tend to agree with you, though. I feel like this is a distraction. the problem is I don't feel that it's a distraction. I feel that maybe the entire deal may not happen. Maybe Elon Musk is not that decided at selling, at buying. Maybe the Twitter board has just accepted this deal because they want to drain the part of the deal that says if the acquisition doesn't happen, then there will be a $1 billion fee to be negotiated to pay for the expenses. Maybe we have people who are so incentivized that the deal not happening that they won't make it happen. Twitter shares rebound as Musk says he's still committed to deal. So that was that. What Terra's hyperinflationary collapse teaches about crypto and Bitcoin. That's an important text that explains how this happened. Basically, Luna was used to guarantee the price of Terra USD. But if you do this, someone clever can start selling all sorts of Terra USD, so that the value is threatened and the system reacts. But it's kind of an attack that's happening. Basically, the system's reaction to guarantee the value of a Terra USD meant that Luna itself was at risk. So the people who had invested in Luna found themselves to be attacked at the benefit of the Terra USD. This shows that all these asset programmatically backed stable coins, all of them potentially have a similar weakness and can be exploited for an attack if someone has enough money to do it. We're gonna have to be careful. What else do we have? Chinese crew captures a Russian tank turret skyrocketing into the sky after an explosion. So we've been talking a lot about explosions of Russian tank, and we have one on camera here, because the problem is these tanks, they store so many explosives and ammos in the main room of the tank, and look what happens when it explodes. The turret of the tank just caps off and pops off and goes into the sky. There the turret is. So you don't need massive explosives. There are so much explosives inside the tank that the turret goes off. Well, the Russia war has not been progressing much, and in fact, there are certain places where the Russian troops appear to be pushed back and withdrawing around Kharkiv in the north. We have also learned today that Russia would not furnish electricity to Finland anymore. They had 10% of the Finnish imports of electricity. So Russia will not be furnishing electricity anymore because Finland apparently hasn't paid. So they have not paid for a month. And it's probably related to sanctions and the country wanting to join NATO. But that will be another point of conflict and tension. The whole provisioning of resources and energy. And it's starting with Finland today. That is it for today, boys. Thank you so much for our two callers. It was amazing to have. And people, they say... I don't want to take too much time. It's okay that you take too much time, because First, this show is about deepening the relationship and the understanding of the world, and that means longer conversations with those people who call. And so I'm totally fine with this. And anyways, there were no one else in the queue, so it's not like you've cut the opportunity to someone else. That is it for tonight, boys. I'll keep working on the farm tomorrow, hopefully, and in the next few days. Keep caring for my plants. Everything is rolling well. Much love. See you all tomorrow. Thank you.